Wisconsin is set to get millions of dollars in an opioid settlement. Now, lawmakers just have to agree on how to spend the money. It's Wednesday, April 24th, and this is Wisconsin Today. Good morning, I'm Alex Crow. Coming up on the show today, a family member of Senate hopeful Eric Hovde is funding a political action committee attacking Democratic incumbent Tammy Baldwin. And a farm equipment manufacturer in Racine County is laying off staff and shifting work out of the country. Stay with us.
Being up to date on the news matters to you. That's where Wisconsin Today comes in. These 10 minutes of the biggest stories from around the state, they're possible thanks to community support. Give now at wpr.org/givewitoday.
Republicans on the legislature's budget committee are objecting to a plan from Governor Tony Evers' administration on how to spend millions of dollars from an opioid settlement. Robert DeAndrea has more.
Wisconsin will get about $36 million in the next fiscal year from a national lawsuit against pharmaceutical companies. The Department of Health Services had a plan for how to spend it, but in a letter released Monday, Republican leaders on the Joint Finance Committee told DHS that the funds would not be approved at this time. Democratic Attorney General Josh Call says he expects funding will eventually be approved, but he said the committee process lacks transparency.
I think that these kind of discussions should be happening in public. There should be input from Wisconsinites and from people on the front lines, and that's how these decisions should be made.
The Republican letter did not state which part of the plan led to the objection. Robert DeAndrea, Wisconsin Public Radio.
A super PAC that has spent more than $200,000 attacking Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin is almost entirely funded by the brother of her Republican challenger, Eric Hovde. The Fix Washington Political Action Committee was created in February and received a $1 million donation from Stephen Hovde days later. The digital ads have attacked Baldwin as a, quote, career politician, while praising Hovde's business acumen. Researcher Sarah Briner with the nonprofit watchdog Open Secrets says super PACs can raise and spend unlimited amounts of money on political ads. She says it all goes back to the 2010 U.S. Supreme Court ruling, commonly known as Citizens United.
It opened the floodgates, as we like to say, to unlimited political donations to groups that can essentially spend almost however they want, other than that they cannot donate to candidates nor coordinate directly with them.
The Political Action Committee funds are in addition to money that Eric Hovde has given directly to his campaign. Records show that he's loaned his campaign $8 million. A free tuition program for education students at the University of Wisconsin-Madison is trying to improve teacher retention in the state. Margaret Faust reports new donations are keeping it going.
In-state tuition is covered for teacher education students if they agree to work in the state for 3 or 4 years. The Teacher Pledge Program will last through the first half of 2029 thanks to $8 million in donations. John Luke Kayabyab signed on to the Teacher Pledge. He earned his master's degree from UW-Madison in curriculum instruction. Now he's an 8th grade math and science teacher in Madison.
I'm very grateful to them for investing in our future and understanding the importance of the people who have their feet on the ground and helping our kids.
Teacher retention is still a major challenge in the state. According to the State Department of Public Instruction, 4 out of every 10 first-year teachers either leaves Wisconsin or the profession after just 6 years. Margaret Faust, Wisconsin Public Radio.
A 180-year-old farm equipment manufacturer in Racine County is laying off staff and shifting work to Mexico. About a third of its workforce was cut, and more job losses could be coming. Rich Glowacki is with the union representing workers at the Case Tractor Factory. He says roughly 220 employees were placed on an indefinite layoff effective April 1st. The cuts come a little more than a year after CNH Industrial and the union agreed to a new collective bargaining agreement, ending a months-long strike. Glowacki says CNH plans to reduce staff at the plant down to roughly 170 employees by 2026.
It's going to hurt the community just as much as it's going to hurt my membership. It doesn't seem to matter to corporations how much they hurt whoever they hurt, as long as their bottom line's big and fat.
The State Department of Workforce Development has not received a layoff notice from the company, and CNH did not respond to requests for comment. rents in Milwaukee and across Wisconsin are rising at some of the fastest rates in the nation. Evan Casey has more on how that's impacting people.
A Rent.com analysis found the median rents in Milwaukee increased by 6.3% in the past year. The median monthly cost for an apartment is now just over $1,800. For Catherine Delgado, that's a real concern. The mother of five wants to move to a safer area, but she says she can't afford to.
So you want the best for your kids. You want to, you know, have better for them. And we can't. We have to stick where we are because rent is just, it's gone up so much.
Eric Halverson and his girlfriend were forced to move out of the city because of the high prices.
But the more we look, the more we realize how ridiculous. It's just everywhere has gone up and up and up.
Wisconsin's median rent is up 6.4% in the past year. Evan Casey, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up, we've got today's episode of Wisconsin Life. Today we'll hear from a father reflecting on his relationship with his religious beliefs and how he's managing this while teaching his daughter their traditions. Stay with us.
Gardening in Wisconsin is a year-round job, and Garden Talk is here for you throughout every season. We help you battle relentless pests and pick your favorite mulch. We also cover how to care for houseplants and successful methods for starting seeds inside. We want to know what keeps your garden growing. Join me, Larry Mueller, for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network, Fridays at 11 and Saturday mornings at 6, or online anytime.
And finally, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a reflection on religion and parenthood.
Jewish people around the world are in the midst of celebrating Passover. The holiday opens with a Seder meal and commemorates the Israelites' exodus from slavery in Egypt. The festival has writer Mark Griffin of Madison reflecting on his own life and his evolving relationship with his beliefs.
I'm not the least observant Jew in America. I attended synagogue as a kid, had my bar mitzvah, and even went to Jewish summer camp. But in the following decades, my life in organized religion took a back seat to less structured spiritual pursuits. Somewhere along the way, I did conclude that our puny little human brains just aren't wired to understand how the universe came to be. And if we were all once part of some big ball of light that exploded and became our galaxies and salamanders, battling entropy and disorder through good deeds makes everything a little more tolerable in this place. But now there's a person with half my chromosomes running around who has suddenly begun asking questions, and I fear something's missing from our Jewish identity. What does it mean to be Jewish? My kindergartner has posed more than once. Now, during Passover, I can't help but think that maybe the answer lies somewhere in the Haggadah. If you're not familiar with the Jewish spring renewal holiday of Passover, it's similar to other more popular ones with eggs and themes of rebirth, but with less bunnies and chocolate and more unleavened bread and indigestion. The story of Passover is one of starting over and escaping the shackles of what we once were, blooming, if you will, like flowers of spring. If you've ever attended a Seder feast and held the Maxwell House branded blue Haggadah book in your hands, you know about the story of the four children. It goes something like this. There is a family with four youths, one wise, one wicked, one simple, and one too young to inquire, sitting at their own Seder. They all, in their own way, are wondering about who they are. I tend to look at it as one child, mine, aging into questions about her own identity. You give the youngest at the table the basics. We were all once energy and light that exploded into this orb we're inhabiting, and we were all slaves once to someone or something. And as enlightened peoples, we're learning to live with that trauma and are trying to do better. Easy enough for a toddler to comprehend, right? But now my girl has aged into the next category, the simple child who asks, "What is this?" I've taught my daughter some prayers, and in the summer she starts Jewish day camp herself. I can't help but think that I don't yet have a sufficient explanation for why a celebration of being freed from slavery thousands of years ago is so essential to who we are as a family and as a people. Then I'm reminded of values. My father-in-law, a slightly lapsed Jew himself, once told me that the most we could teach his granddaughter were our values. So I tell her to express herself, stand up for herself and others when wronged, and to listen to her teachers. I show her love with unconditional fervor. She is an expression of God, after all. and I tell her in bits and pieces the story of how we all came to be in this land, about the woman she's partly named after who had to run from the bad guys to survive. I tell her the story of Passover. Once, there was a community. They struggled. They performed acts of kindness towards one another. They worked. They cooked. They fought. They ran from danger. They survived. They expressed gratitude and sorrow. They praised the links between them, the light. They shared their stories with the next generation, honoring those who came before them. They took care of people in need. They tried to make things better. I'm still not sure how to do this organized religion thing, but I know I've got some things right. And that has to count for something.
Mark Griffin is a writer who lives in Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. And find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And that'll do it for this Wednesday. Glad you could join us for Wisconsin Today. Thanks for being here. I'm your host, Alex Crow, and our producers, the people putting the show together behind the scenes today, that would be Mallory Chang and John Davis. As always, you know where to find us every single weekday morning, right here in your podcast feed. So until tomorrow, have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you again soon.